Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness, produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
On today's show, there's an epidemic in the United States that has ravaged big cities and small towns, affecting citizens of every age and economic background. It's a crisis that has law enforcement stymied and the medical community at odds. The crisis is threefold: opioid addiction, heroin use, and opioid-related deaths.
With a terrifying increase in the number of deaths due to opioid addiction, many options are being explored in an attempt to save lives. One of them is Narcan.
And we're dedicating this entire show to naloxone, also called Narcan. What it is, how it works, and why one city in America is putting Narcan into the hands of every citizen.
We begin at the roots of the epidemic. Once upon a time, doctors relied on opioid prescriptions as the gold standard of pain relief for their patients. As millions have come to realize, this story does not end happily. Once regarded as safe and effective, opioids are highly addictive. And as doctors cut back on prescriptions, some users turn to heroin as a cheaper substitute. And now we're facing an alarming rise in opioid-related deaths nationwide. According to the American Society of Addiction Medicine, in 2015, there were over 20,000 overdose deaths related to prescription painkillers and almost 13,000 heroin overdose deaths.
As any ER doctor will tell you, hospital emergency rooms are on the front lines in treating drug overdoses. One physician relies on her experience in the ER to guide her as the health commissioner of the city of Baltimore. She's broken ground with her decision to make the fast-acting antidote Narcan available to every Baltimore resident to respond to the heroin epidemic. Dr. Lena Wen joins us to explain why she's taking this innovative approach. Dr. Wen is also the author of When Doctors Don't Listen: How to Avoid Misdiagnoses and Unnecessary Tests.
Welcome to Take Care, Dr. Wen. Thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you. Happy to join you today.
Before we get into the details about what you're doing in Baltimore, just explain, how do you think we got to this point? What is behind this alarming trend of opioid-related deaths in the U.S.?
It's a difficult issue to address because there are so many components. We know that physicians and the pharmaceutical industry has a role to play in getting us to where we are. In fact, I'm a bit ashamed to admit this now, but when I was in the ER as a medical student, as a resident physician, I routinely prescribed opioids for patients who may not have needed them. We learned early on in medical training that our goal is to take away patients' pain, which is an important goal. The problem, though, is if you sprain your ankle, if you fall down and bruise your knee, it may be okay to have pain. Getting to pain-free requires taking medications that often have significant side effects, including the risk of overdose and the risk of addiction as well. That's not something that we in medical training have traditionally learned about. We have gotten to this point as a culture where we give a pill for every pain. And studies from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have shown that there are enough prescriptions for opioids that are given every year in the U.S. for every adult American to have their own bottle. This is a huge problem. It's a cultural problem. The aggressive marketing by pharmaceutical industries have to do with this as well. But it's a problem that physicians have to own. We have to say we now need to abide by the federal guidelines when it comes to limiting the prescriptions for this extremely addictive and dangerous substance to those patients who absolutely need it. And we also need patients to work with us as well. Instead of coming in to ask for a pill for every pain, the questions that patients should ask should also include, do I really need this medication? What are the alternatives, which could include physical therapy, rest, or waiting it out? And what are the side effects of this medication, just like we would be asking side effects of any other treatment as well.
Now, we hear the word opioids, but will you specifically tell us what prescription medicines are considered opioids so listeners will know whether they might have this prescription in their medicine cabinet right now as we speak?
Opioids are derived from opium. Heroin is an illegal street drug that is an opioid. There are prescription opioids that are prescribed that have similar effects to heroin. They also induce euphoria. They have similar effects, and these prescription medications include oxycodone, OxyContin. They are contained in medications like Percocet and Vicodin, morphine, Zoloft. These are all medications that are part of the opioid family. Something else that has been particularly troubling in recent years is an opioid called fentanyl. Fentanyl is many times stronger than morphine, many times stronger than heroin. I use fentanyl in the ER when someone has broken their hip and is screaming in pain. It is an effective medication for quick onset extreme pain, but unfortunately fentanyl has been manufactured in labs and is now illegally being combined with heroin and other drugs. And there has been a large rise in the number of people dying from opioid overdose. Fentanyl has a large role to play, but so does heroin, so do these other prescription opioids. I've treated three-year-olds who have accidentally gotten into their grandparents' medicine cabinets and have overdosed on prescription pain medications. I've treated 18-year-olds who are experimenting. They may experiment once, but unfortunately that may kill them. And I've treated all kinds of individuals who, there is no face of addiction. You can't look at someone and know that this person is on opioids or is likely to be addicted to opioids. We know that this is something that affects all of us, no matter what is our walk of life. And that's why it's so important for us to treat this as the public health emergency that it is.
And I wanted to go back to something that you said about a younger child overdosing on something I find in a grandparent's cabinet. A lot of the names that you've mentioned, particularly Percocet, that's sort of like the standard treatment. Something happens, you have a 30-day use prescription, but you only feel – many people have surgery and they feel like they'll wean themselves off after 3 or 4 days. And then you have that container of pills sitting in a cabinet, and this is also how – teenagers who like to experiment get their hands on this very, very controlled substance, and it gets out there into the mainstream.
That's right. You just articulated two important issues. The first is that there is an epidemic of overprescribing. It has become routine for physicians. And again, I hold my hand up and say that I was involved as a physician in this too. There is this cultural sense that we have to prescribe a lot of opioid pills because this is just what we do. The recent guidelines from the CDC that have come out to talk about opioid prescribing are very useful because they start with a different understanding. They start with the understanding that we should start low and go slow. Prescribe the medication that is the least addictive, that has the least potential for harm, and prescribe the least amount of that. So don't start with a medication that is extremely potent and that could result in addiction and an overdose, but rather start the other way around. Start low and go slow. The second issue is with that you mentioned is the misuse of these pills. What often happens is someone is given a 30-day supply after simple dental surgery when they really only needed at most 5 pills. Then they have this 100 pills that are left over that then sit in a medicine cabinet that could then be misused, abused by other individuals. And we found that many people who have become addicted to prescription opioids first start using it because they found pills in someone else's cabinet. And so that's why disposing of the amount that is not needed is extremely important as well.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness, produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
We are talking right now to the health commissioner of the city of Baltimore, Dr. Lena Wen, who has joined us in the past on Take Care. We're talking about the opioid epidemic. And right now, Dr. Wen, we'd like to switch to the bold move you have made in Baltimore, and that is training everyday residents about the antidote to the opioid. It's called naloxone, or we refer to it as Narcan. I'd like you to describe what brought you to the decision, which I imagine might have been slightly controversial when you proposed it to the folks in Baltimore. Give us a quick overview of why you came to the conclusion that training not only first responders, but everyday folks would be helpful in helping you combat the overdose deaths from opioids.
In 2015, there were 393 people in our city, in Baltimore City, who died from overdose, which is about one person per day. It's more than the number of people in our city who die from homicide, more than the number of people who die from car accidents, from suicide. And what is so tragic about this number is that for opioid overdoses, there is one medication that is a complete antidote. This medication is called naloxone or Narcan. I've used it in the ER hundreds of times, and I've seen how someone who would otherwise be dead will be walking and talking within seconds to minutes of getting this medication administered to them. It seems unconscionable that if we have the ability to save someone's life and there are that many people in our city who are dying, then the least we can do is to give everyone the ability to save someone's life. And indeed, we heard so many stories from our fellow residents about how they wish that they had this medication, naloxone, available to them, because if you find a loved one is overdosing, and let's say that you call 911, by the time that 911 shows up, it may be too late. Those minutes are literally a matter of life and death. And so that's why we believe that naloxone should be part of everyone's medicine cabinet and everyone's first aid kit. So in October of 2015, we got legislation passed so that as of October, this is just over a year ago, that I became the single prescriber of naloxone to every single resident in our city. We issued a blanket prescription in my name to every single resident in our city. We also conducted trainings. Now there have been over 18,000 trainings across our city. We did trainings in jails, in street corners, online, in universities, in community organizations. And to date, everyday people, not necessarily doctors or nurses or paramedics, but everyday people have saved over 620 lives in our city. Now, unfortunately, there are still unprecedented numbers of people dying from overdose, and there's a lot more work for us to do. And treatment for opioid addiction is something that has to happen over the longer term. Naloxone really is just something that we have to give someone in the short term to save their life. But we strongly believe that unless we're able to save someone's life today, there's no chance of them having a better tomorrow.
How do they obtain Narcan, and how is it paid for?
Narcan is administered through two routes. One is intramuscular, given in the muscle, similar to an EpiPen. The other version is given in the nose. It can be sprayed, similar to Flonase. It used to be that if you wanted to get Narcan, you would have to go through a training that was offered throughout the city. You would then have to go to a doctor to get a prescription. Then you would have to go to a pharmacy to get it filled, which is a lot of different steps, and many doctors may not be comfortable or familiar with writing a Narcan prescription. So we changed the legislation, and so the standing order means that as long as someone goes through a training, they will immediately get the prescription for Narcan. Some of them will even get the medication Narcan right there as soon as they're getting the training. The way that we've been able to pay for it is that we've negotiated with Medicaid so that an individual who is on Medicaid can get Narcan for a dollar. And if they can't pay for that dollar, they'll get it free. Now, we consistently, though, have a problem with payment for Narcan in a different way, which is that we also want to give Narcan to those individuals who are the most vulnerable, who are the most likely to overdose. We don't want to wait until they go to the pharmacy to get their prescription filled. The cost of Narcan has increased exponentially, in not just in Baltimore City, but across the country. So payment for Narcan by the city remains a major issue.
Can you give us an idea of the cost of one dose of Narcan?
We typically have two doses of Narcan for every administration, and that's because if one dose does not work, the instruction is to give a second dose, and the amount is probably just under $100 for those doses.
How controversial was this when you came up with the idea and explained it to your colleagues? Was it hard to get this passed?
There is, unfortunately, a lot of stigma and misunderstanding about the nature of addiction. People still think that addiction is a moral failing, that it is somehow a choice that individuals make to use drugs and to continue using drugs. That is, of course, not what science tells us. Science tells us unequivocally that addiction is a chronic brain disease, that opioids are some of the most addictive substances that are out there, that treatment works and that recovery exists, but we have to invest in that treatment. We have to see addiction in the way that we see any other disease. You would never say to somebody who has diabetes, why do you need insulin? Why can't you just get cured on your own? And you deserve to go to jail because you happen to have this disease. We would never think about doing that. And yet we have that understanding of the disease of addiction. And so we hear unfortunate comments made about why is it that we should bother saving someone's life? I mean, that's not something that you consider to be an acceptable comment because it's inhumane. We've also heard comments about, well, wouldn't giving Narcan, making it available widely, wouldn't it just encourage people to use drugs more? Again, this is not based on science, but on stigma. You would never consider saying to someone who needs an EpiPen, well, why should they have an EpiPen? Wouldn't that make them more likely to eat peanuts next time? So we do hear these stigmatizing comments, but I would say that throughout our city, there has been much better understanding and a widespread acceptance that our duty, first and foremost, as residents, as community members, has to be focused on saving lives. This is something that not just affects certain individuals, it's something that affects virtually everyone in our city, because everyone knows someone who has an addiction, who has experienced an overdose, and if we can all save a life today, we should learn to do so.
We don't have much time, only about a minute, but you've gone on record as saying there are two other problems in this equation. The fact that societal conditions lead to this addiction, that it happens more represented in a population that's disenfranchised, and also, too, that there aren't enough treatment options. In other words, for every 10 addicts, there's only one treatment slot available.
There is an important question to ask whenever we're talking about treating addiction or really any other ailment, which is when someone's tomorrow is no better than today, what is the incentive for that person to get better? And so it is true that when we look at the people who are overdosing, the individuals who have a high rate of addiction, these are the same areas that also have high poverty, high unemployment, unstable housing, and uncertain futures. And we also know that individuals who use pain medications are not only treating physical pain, that there is also deep emotional pain and trauma that they're treating as well. So this is not an easy solution. The problem is not an easy problem. However, we do need to start with the understanding that addiction is a disease, that a public health approach is important, that treatment works, but we don't have it available in nearly the numbers that are appropriate. As you said, a recent Surgeon General report found that only 1 in 10 people who have the disease of addiction are able to get the treatment that they need, which is a number that we would never find acceptable for any other illness. And so it's up to all of us to stand together and say that treating addiction as a crime is unscientific, it's inhumane, and ineffective. And all of us have to treat it with the urgency and compassion as we would any other illness.
Dr. Lena Nguyen is an emergency medicine physician who is also the health commissioner of the city of Baltimore. We've been discussing with her groundbreaking approach to arm every resident in the city of Baltimore with a prescription for Narcan, which is the antidote to opioid overdose. Thank you so much for lending your expertise to this important discussion, Dr. Nguyen.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you, Lorraine and Linda.